The seventh sin in my ongoing series on the deadly seven sins of blogging is being unfindable. The other sins include being fake, irrelevant, boring, unreadable, irresponsible, inattentive. Now, admittedly, lack of findability seems more like a sin of omission rather than commission, but being unfindable is just a sin that bloggers commit against themselves, and that's why it's among the seven deadly. I've written more than 1,000 posts on my blog, but usually the posts on the homepage are the only posts people read. In this sense, blogs are kind of like the news. A newspaper that's several days old lines bird cages. Reading blog archives is like reading yesterday's news. There's really no appeal. And yet, many times, posts in the archives really do have more substance than news commentary. A lot more substance than news commentary. The posts incorporate research. They get into depth in issues. They don't really deserve to go into the garbage can once they slide off the homepage. Michael Arrington, the person behind TechCrunch, he compares blogging to reaching down and grabbing a handful of sand. The sand slowly slips through your fingers. You have to reach down and grab another handful of sand and another and another and another. In this metaphor, obviously the readers are your sand, and the reaching and the scooping that you're doing, these are your new posts. How can you enable readers to naturally find all the content that's in your archives? How can you really make all these hundreds of posts that you write more visible, more prominent, especially if readers are actually looking for the content? This is kind of what the study of usability is all about. Peter Morville, author of Ambient Findability, he wants to move toward a world, quote, in which we can find anyone or anything from anywhere at any time. He admits that we probably will never achieve it, but it's the direction we're moving. So to start in this direction, Morville asks three key questions. Can people find your website? Can they find your way around your website? And can they find the content, products, and services despite your website? So you can implement several easy aggregation techniques to try to increase the findability of your content. You can add, for example, tags and categories to your posts, and readers can navigate your content this way. Tags function similarly to categories. You usually add tags as you would index keywords, including as many as you want to describe your content. But categories, on the other hand, are kind of like folders. You usually only have about a dozen categories or folders on your site to kind of group your content into. You can display your categories in a list on the sidebar, which could be helpful, except that pretty much no one ever browses your site this way. You could also aggregate your tags into one of those cool-looking jumbled masses of words called a tag cloud, but like categories, they don't seem that useful, especially to readers who are even looking for content. At least I never use them. They're merely a visual novelty, kind of like a word noodle type thing. Another way to increase the findability of your old content is to add a string of related posts below each post. And there's a variety of WordPress plugins that'll actually do this for you. One of them is the Contextual Related Posts plugin. And these related posts plugins have different matching algorithms. So some of them match posts and pull up related posts by tag, some by keyword, some by custom keywords. Mostly, I think lists of related posts do actually help searchers who land on your site from search engine results. These searchers, they're usually looking for information, so it's good for them to drill down into a path that they've already started into additional content on that topic. You can also aggregate your content through plugins that compile your most popular posts. And one good plugin to do this is called Popularity Contest. Popularity is defined by hits, links, and comments. Your most popular posts, however, may not really be the ones that you want to showcase. And this is kind of why I don't implement this plugin. My most popular posts apparently are posts about grasshoppers that look like aliens, which was a fun little post I did one night. A WordPress image gallery plugin instruction post, and notes from a keynote on WordPress 2.7, which, if you don't know, we're up to WordPress 2.8.5 now. So you can also manually pull in all your best posts, and I recommend using the links feature in WordPress to manage your lists. You can also use something new that's come out recently called the section widget. This is a tabbed widget, and it shows lists in various ways, or whatever you want to kind of, it shows text widgets basically in various ways, and they're compressed in a tabbed interface. But although I was really excited about this when it first came out, actually it slowed my site's loading time down quite a bit, and I ended up removing it as much as I liked it. I've really been trying to work on my site's loading speed lately. So let's step into another area, SEO. We need to recognize a basic fact about websites. The majority of your readers, anywhere from 50 to 85% or more, are going to land on your site not because they know you and they're visiting your site, not because they have it bookmarked, but because they are searching for something. So they're landing on it through search engines. So, and this makes sense because the web, as you know, is used mainly for research, right? It's a tool for learning. But if most visitors mainly find you through search engines, shouldn't you write your content so that it is optimized for search engines? Shouldn't search engine optimization be a key influence in the way you're crafting these posts that you're writing? I think it should be, right? Because we're writing to be found. And if people find you through search engines, then you should really write for search engines almost as much as you're writing for readers. And Jacob Nielsen agrees with me here. He says, web users are growing ever more search dominant. Search is how people discover new websites and find individual pages within websites and intranets. Unless you're listed on the first search engine results page, you might as well not exist. So the first duty of writing for the web is to write to be found. And what he says, I think most of us agree with, but going about it can be somewhat of a mystery. In order to make your content SEO rich, and SEO just stands for search engine optimized, search engine optimization, you really need to first figure out what keywords you're writing for. And you can search for these, for example, with Google's pay-per-click or Yahoo pay-per-click AdWords, see what kind of words rank high. There's another paid service called Word Tracker. Or you can just guess, or you could use words perhaps from Technorati. However you do it, try to figure out what keywords you're targeting. A lot of times I just try to think to myself, how would I search for this? What keywords would I use? And then I try to use those. Because let's face it, who has time to sit here researching the most popular keywords on every single post? So after you figure out your keywords, then you have to integrate them into your title especially, and your first few paragraphs, especially your headings. Throw them in your image alt tags and other places. Of course, don't go overboard. You don't want to just repeat them a lot of different times in order to try to game the search engines, because of course the search engines aren't stupid. They've been being gamed for the last 10-15 years, right? So they're smart. One trick you can do, however, which sort of games the search engines, is to use something called the all-in-one SEO plugin. Now this plugin is WordPress plugin, so if you're not on WordPress, you won't find this helpful. But it allows you to make a title that Google sees and a title that your readers see. So you get the best of both worlds here. You can make a creative title for your readers and a boring title stacked with your right keywords for Google. Now, honestly, as much as I believe in SEO, I just sometimes don't bother with it because a lot of my posts, I think that, you know, this is not going to rank for any specific keyword. And I'm not necessarily always writing just to attract more hits. You know, it's a great side benefit and a bonus from blogging, but not necessarily in it as a business. So there's that. At the same rate, it's very nice to get a lot of hits. So keep SEO in mind. Another technique that you can use to try to make your content more findable is to make it findable in different formats. So a lot of times we think, oh, people just read my content on my website. That's really not the case. People read it through Twitter, through Facebook, through email, some through the RSS reader. And we already talked about people who read it through search engine results. But you definitely want to push your content out to Twitter and to Facebook and to email every time you publish a new post. And there's a really easy way you can actually do this. You don't have to manually do this every time. If you go to a site called Twitter Feed, you can connect a feed, an RSS feed, to a Twitter identity so that every time you publish to that RSS feed, it sends a little message across Twitter. And then in Facebook, you can tell it to pull in your Twitter feed. So that way you've got those three covered. And then for the email subscription, use a service called FeedBurner. FeedBurner at feedburner.google.com allows you to activate an email subscription to give readers an email subscribe option so that they can get your posts by email each time. So that's really handy too, because if you are trying to follow a blog and you want to make sure you don't miss things, you often subscribe to the email feed because the RSS feed is just something that you could have hundreds of feeds in and things get buried very easily. Now, one challenge that still remains with formats is the interchangeability of audio and text. I regularly publish podcasts and all the time readers are writing in and saying, do you have a transcription? Do you have a text version of this podcast? This podcast may be an hour long, right? And usually people don't think that it would be incredibly arduous to create this text version. It really is. It could take all day to write this. I mean, I'm not a transcriptionist, so maybe that's part of the problem. But even typing fast and using digital technology is still very arduous. As far as like a workaround, I think Adobe Sound Booth actually transcribes audio. I'm not totally sure. Now, of course, it's a paid program. I think it's like $300 or something. But you can find applications that will render your audio into text. Of course, I imagine you'd have to clean it up quite a bit and polish it. And then there's this curious fact that nobody really seems to consider, that when you transcribe audio, it sounds really incoherent because the way we speak is different from the way we write. Recently, somebody transcribed an interview I did. I was only intending it to be an audio thing, but she sent me a direct transcription and it blew me away because I sounded completely stupid. She did it very verbatim and I was like, wow, this is how I sound and you could still understand me. And I spent a couple of hours cleaning up the audio or the text just so that it sounded right. I didn't want to publish this really embarrassing thing. I should put it out there just for fun. There are some services that make going from text to audio pretty easy, unlike this podcast that I'm doing manually. Services like AudioGo, that's AudioGo, will put a little plugin on your posts that will automatically read your content. And of course, when you have a machine reading your content, it sounds like a machine, sounds like a robot. This one actually sounds pretty good. I mean, they're getting better. And I don't know how much better they can get. But for an example, go to Todd O'Neill's Doing Media blog. It's just, I believe it's doingmedia.net. And you can listen to a few posts. I actually had this plugin on my site a while ago, like a year and a half or 2 years ago. So I was just fascinated by it. I thought, oh, here's an immediate win for accessibility. But I kind of think that people who have poor vision online and who need screen readers already have them. And the fact that your blog has a nifty little plugin probably won't make that big a difference. Although, I don't know. According to Glenda Watson, she says, Glenda Watson Hyatt, in her book, How Poor Is Your Blog? Poor standing for perceivable, operable, understandable, and robust. She says that content must be perceivable through sight, hearing, or touch. Since not everyone has the same abilities or equal use of the same senses, one of the main keys to accessibility is ensuring that content is transformable from one format to another, enabling your blog readers to perceive it in multiple ways. And if you go to the AudioGo site, you'll see that the way they're marketing their product, and I believe it's free, so I don't really know what the paid version is, if there is one, but the way they're pitching it is that if you're reading a lot of content that you want to take on the go in an audio form, you can use this plugin to capture it, capture the audio versions. So apart from actually, you know, making your site more accessible, more findable, you get a lot of SEO benefit from a text transcription of an audio podcast. I think a lot of people can find you. And this is part of the problem with multimedia is that, I mean, people search for words. And if your content is trapped in audio, in video, it's not findable. So it's kind of a big problem. And for that reason alone, I would recommend, if you know how and if you can figure it out, it'd be a good idea to just transcribe the whole thing, as incoherent as it might be, and just put it as a show note so that people can find it by SEO. Finally, as you're designing for different formats, you can't neglect the mobile platform. You really have to make sure that your content is actually visible on mobile platforms. And I don't know how much of an imperative this is now, because a lot of mobile devices, especially the iPhone, have pretty sophisticated browsers in the phones now. So they will render the content and display it pretty well, at least even on my piece of junk HTC Touch Pro, Windows mobile platform. It has Mini, Opera Mini, and it usually shows websites pretty well. You can tell that I'm not a big fan of my phone, but there's a lot of other phones out there, right? There's a lot of phones that don't have built-in browsers, and you want to definitely make your content visible on those phones. So how can you do that? Well, you can first of all test to see how good your content displays on a mobile device by going to ready.mobi. Yeah, that's just ready.mobi. There's no .com or .net or .org or anything. And plug in your site, and it will run a little test in a matter of seconds, and it will tell you whether you're good or whether you're bad. Those are the actual terms used. And when I first did this, I actually got a bad result, which made me feel bad. Just kidding. So I popped in a plugin by Alex King called WordPress Mobile Edition. And this plugin is really pretty easy, but you do have to, once you install it, you have to transfer a part of the plugin into your theme directory, because it's got a mobile theme basically that it activates. And after I activated this plugin, I reran my site through Mobi Ready, and it received a good rating. So now, I've never really had a lot of people complain to me that my content isn't readable on their cheap little phone, or whatever phone browser they may have. But now I maybe have a wider reach. If there's one thing that does bug me about blogs and the mobile web, is that people often insert more tags in their content. So, and this is good, right? You have this little read more tag, which splits your post into two. But then on the web, when you're reading that in your feed reader on your mobile device, you have to like click the read more and reload a new page. And that reloading can take a long time. So you can actually add another plugin. I think it's called Full Text Feed, which overrides that more link. So that even if you have the read more link in your post, it the feed reader ignores it. So that's one more way to make your content a little bit more friendly for the mobile web. And finally, as a pure curiosity, you can see what your site actually looks like through about 5 different phones, such as Nokia and a few others that I can't remember, through these emulator things, through an emulator on the Mobi Ready site. Now, finally, I just have a few other tips about how to make your content more findable. And the first one is to make your URL match your blog title. And this is something that, it seems totally simple, and yet a lot of people don't do it. For example, and this is actually how I chose my URL for my site, interestingly enough. I was trying to pick a phrase, and one domain I owned was idrather be writing.com, and I kind of didn't like it because it sounded cliche. I wasn't sure if it signaled tech writing, but my sister remembered the URL after like a year. We'd been talking about it or something, and she completely remembered it, and I thought, wow, if somebody can remember it, then that's what I need. But let's say, for example, my colleague, Paul Pearson, he's got a blog at blog.paulpearson.com, and his blog is called Technically Speaking. So when I try to go find that site, I can never quite remember where it is. Is it technicallyspeaking.com? No. Is it paulpearson.com? No. Is it technicallyspeaking.blog.paulpearson.com? It gets confusing. So you really want to try to match those two. And I've never been a fan of the blog dot. I think that you should own the domain of your site. And it should be something fairly simple to remember. I mean, a lot of times you're just on the web and you think, oh, I wonder what's on Tom's site right now. You just go to idratherbewriting.com for the I'd Rather Be Writing blog. And it's a no-brainer. Now, maybe I'm just remembering that. And of course, I have an apostrophe in mind, so that can throw people off. The apostrophe's not in the URL and so forth. But anyway, that's my take on that, on the URL. The second tip is to include an about page. Why? How does this have anything to do with findability? Well, your about page is one of the most searched for pages on your site, or at least the most visited page on your site. And if it's so visited, then shouldn't you have one? And shouldn't it be prominent? Really, people want to know who it is they're reading. I mean, you're taking in somebody's opinions that are informing your own position and opinions on something. You want to know really where you're getting your information from and whether it's from a valid, credible source. So definitely make that author page, that about the author page, visible and readily available. Finally, use FeedBurner to route your RSS feed. If you ever change platforms, for example, from Expression Engine to WordPress, which is something I recently did for a client, then you can actually update the RSS feed on your new site without losing all your subscribers. And I never quite know how to explain this, how FeedBurner works, because it is just, it's hard to explain. But basically, FeedBurner gives you a static feed, such as feeds.feedburner.com/TomJohnson. And it allows you to point an original feed to that FeedBurner feed. So the original feed, for example, on my blog site is idratherbewriting.com/feed. But let's say that tomorrow I wake up and I say, I'm sick of WordPress, I'm sick of being hacked, I'm going to move to Expression Engine. And I move all my content and I've got 2,000 readers, and I realize, oh, the feed for Expression Engine isn't idratherbewriting.com/feed, it's idratherbewriting.com/sites/RSS 2.0. Oh shoot, that means all my readers who are subscribed to my old feed are going to be gone. But actually, no, FeedBurner says just go ahead and update this original feed. So I log into FeedBurner. I say, oh, what was my original feed? I'd rather be writing.com/feed and change that to the new one, whatever it happens to be. And the FeedBurner feed remains the same. So you don't lose your thousands of subscribers. Now, there's one caveat. If you ever happen to lose your FeedBurner login, such as you can't remember your secret password, there's actually almost no way to retrieve it. So you're kind of at the mercy of Google, which has no point of contact because it's become so huge. But that's really kind of a side issue. So to close, I want to read a quote by Aaron Walter, who wrote an article on A List Apart on findability. He says, "The fundamental goal of findability is to persistently connect with your audience with the stuff you write, design, and build. When you create relevant and valuable content, present it in a machine-readable format, and provide tools that facilitate content exchange and portability, you'll help ensure that the folks you're trying to reach get your message. A website that ignores findability is whispering into the wind, hoping that someone passing by might catch a hint of its message." So the end message here is don't whisper to the wind. Don't let your content blow around aimlessly. Make it findable. When it's findable, you get to keep it. It's yours forever. When it's not, when it's scattered and all over the place, it's like throwing it into the wind. All right, visit my blog at idratherbewriting.com and stay tuned for more posts which are read using different techniques. This time I'm reading into a Shure microphone in a closet of all places. The Shure mic is hooked into the H4, the Zoom H4. And I tried to stray away from verbatim reading just because however much I attempt to do that, it never quite sounds natural. So we'll see. I'm going to keep experimenting with different techniques. Thanks. If you have any feedback, Tom at idratherbewriting.com.